Hello, welcome to the Exotic Pet Collective, where we talk about tarantulas, scorpions, and all pets exotic. I'm your host, Richard. You may know me from my YouTube channel, The Tarantula Collective. And today we're talking to Garv from Arachno2. We'll be discussing all things regarding his tarantulas, inverts, YouTube channels. Just get to know him a little bit, have a nice conversation. Now, this week's episode is brought to you by thetarantulacollective.com. You can find care sheets, merchandise, discount codes, list of breeders, all those things. Just check out thetarantulacollective.com. Stay connected and up to date with everything that's going on in the collective. And sign up for the mailing list if you want to get first access to new content. Today's guest, as I mentioned, is Gar from Arachno2. He's coming to us from, I guess, the other side of the Atlantic. You're in Wales, is that correct?
I'm in Swansea, Wales. Yep, sunny South Wales.
All right. And you have a YouTube channel, Arachno2.
That's right, yeah. I've been going about 3 years, man. Yeah.
How long have you been keeping tarantulas?
Since I was 6 years old. But first, before we start, man, it's a pleasure to be on the podcast with you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, no worries, man. When we spoke about it, I was really, really excited to do this. So I've been waiting all day, kind of like set up and ready to go. So I've been keeping about, 32 years. I had my first spider when I was 6 from my dad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so really, really got into it, though, when I was about 18, 19.
Yeah, so that means you're almost 40, huh?
Nearly, man. Nearly, unfortunately.
Getting old quick, huh?
Yeah, next month too. I'll be 38 next month.
Oh, wow. See, I'm giving you a hard time, and I guess technically you're younger than me still.
Still, just.
I'll be 39 in January.
Oh, sounds so. We'll be the same age for like a couple of months.
Yeah. So 6 years old, you got your first tarantula.
Yeah, man. Yep.
Explain that to me.
It was a Gramostola porteri.
Okay.
So the chili rose, you know, bog standard pet rock, happy days. What happened was my dad wanted me to learn to swim, so I must have won some kind of, like, you know, 200 meters. I've swum 200 meters or something. I got a little badge for it, and yeah. He wanted to get me something as a gift for doing that. And I asked for a spider after seeing. I saw a Goliath bird-eating spider in like a National Geographic type book. And I was always wanted that. I always got it out when I was a kid, you know, really, really young, and looked at that page. Yeah. And my dad said, you know, you can have whatever you want us to for that. I said, I want the spider. So he got me that, thinking probably that I'd be interested in it for like 2 minutes and then he'd be looking after it for the rest of his life. But that spider stayed with me until I went to university. So
I know a lot of people, like Princess Sophie Pink, she's over there in the UK.
She's young and started. Yeah, she's absolutely great.
When I was young, I had some frogs and hamsters. I'm trying to think, maybe some salamanders or, you know, small little lizards that my parents would give me. But I don't even think at that time I knew, like, the pet shops around me didn't have tarantulas. I didn't even know that was something people were keeping. Is it pretty big over there? I mean, when you were young, was it something that was pretty?
So when I was young, you had your basic, your bog standard tarantula. So you had the Mexican Redknee, you know, Brachypelma hamori. You had your Chileans. And that was about it. I think you had like a choice of like 3. There were more stuff there out, you know, if you were like going to the British Tarantula Society expos and stuff. They've been going for 30 years. So there was more things coming in slowly, as it, and I think in the 90s it just went off. And in 1991, 1992, the hobby went crazy, you know, and you can get like hundreds of different species. It was, it kicked off pretty quick. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it wasn't big over here in the U.S. I just wasn't aware of it. I guess I should put that disclaimer on there. It is possible that
some really iconic tarantula. The discoverers coming from America. There were people out there looking for the spiders. You know, not necessarily releasing into the pet trade, but in the late 80s and early 90s. there were, you know, USA keepers, especially keepers and breeders. So it's not like it's developed overnight over with you. You know, it's been there in the background. Right. You know, as a kind of subculture, like it is now, really.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, I grew up in a small town in West Virginia, which you probably, I don't even know if you're familiar with that state, because you probably know about as much about our country as I do of yours. Maybe a little bit more, but it's a mountain state.
Nice.
You know, it's like right around maybe a million people in the entire state, you know, so it's most cities are larger than the entire population of our state.
Well,
kind of rural.
Put it in perspective, Rich, my country, Wales, we've got 3.5 million people in our whole country.
That's a good point.
We've got the sheep actually outnumber us 3-1, I think it is. There's so much farmers about
the place. That's
pretty wild. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's, you know, there was a couple of pet stores and they would have birds and fish and stuff like that, but, you know, not a whole lot of snakes or tarantulas. And, you know, that was like, I don't even think at that time, like Petco and PetSmart were really a big thing. Like the main huge chain pet stores.
No, I don't think so.
It was mainly all locals.
Yeah, it was like individual small businesses. I don't think the market had been established yet to have anything like, I think what we got Pets at Home here is kind of like your Petco, but you know, exactly the same problems as you get over there with the Petco we got with Pets at Home. You know, they don't specialize in tarantulas, do they? So they don't tend to know absolutely everything about every spider.
Right. Yeah, this is one of the craziest things that happens in the Facebook group is just this constant bashing of people that buy their tarantulas from those chain pet stores, especially when they say
rescue.
You know, I'm rescuing your tarantula. Yeah, but what are your feelings on that? How do you think? What do you think is the best way to kind of handle that situation? Like, you know, you go to a pet store like that, you see a tarantula that's being cared for poorly, or incorrectly. I mean, are you tempted to buy it or? How do you react?
I think when I first, you know, when I was a bit younger, a bit less cynical, I would have probably bought it. I really do feel for these people who are actually thinking that they're rescuing them. I haven't been in the trade kind of myself. I understand that, you know, really with a large business like that, if you buy it, they're just going to get another one. It's not going to stop the lack of knowledge, lack of care. It's probably best to kind of approach the guys in the shop, just friendly. Hey, man, how's it going? Tell me about this. You know, and you can, if they tell you and they up the speed, that's great. If they don't know how to look after, then you could just maybe suggest, you know, how about giving it some decent substrate? How about giving it a decent water bowl? Take that sponge out for starters.
Yeah. Yeah, sponges and water dishes. That was
crazy.
I mean, that was the first thing they told me to do when I got my first
job. Oh, yeah,
I was about 18 in college, and it was, you know, I think it was in like a deli cup, like a 16-ounce deli cup or something, with just a tarantula and a sponge. And I was like, you know, you get online, you read some stuff, you watch some stuff back in like 2000. I mean, that was the suggested.
Yeah, yeah, there's the way to go.
Husbandry
or,
for that.
Or you stick a pebble in it.
Wood chips and, yeah.
Because like, no one.
Yeah, I can't even remember. I can't remember how old I was when I realized like this is. I think what happened. I didn't even read that it was a bad idea. I just noticed it was getting really moldy.
It stinks.
I'm like, this can't be good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I wouldn't want to drink this water.
I'm not going to go buy another one. Yeah. You know, I actually when I had my tarantula, I had a roommate that was kind of nosy. So if I had anything of value that I wanted to. I mean, this is just how dumb I was back then. But if I had something of value I didn't want my tarantula to get, I would hide it inside of the tarantula's enclosure.
That's perfect.
You know, like, just put it in a pill bottle and put it underneath the substrate. It was pretty rare.
Yeah, that's absolutely perfect. He's not going in there at all. Or stick, like, if you've got something in a drawer, you stick a molt on the top of the drawer. You won't go anywhere near it. Yeah. No, I know. I kind
so
of
I, there. I saw that you started a Facebook group.
Yeah.
And I'm curious... you know, why you would do that to yourself.
I know.
It's like, what's going on there?
I started getting fed up with Facebook groups. I get invited. I found, this is crazy. I found the invite button, not the button, the invite part of Facebook, and I had like 400 or 300 groups. So I was just like, you know, declined to all of them. And I'm a bit fed up about the groups themselves. So I was like, bugger it, I'm just going to make my own. I just hang out in my own group. You know, I don't have to play by anyone else's rules, but it is starting to get to be quite a lot of work. Which I should have.
It happens.
Yeah, which I should have. We're looking from kind of your group there, isn't it? You know, the Tarantula Collective group on Facebook. That is,
yeah, it was.
A lot
it started
of
out. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was a lot of fun at first.
Yeah,
not that it's not fun now. Like I'm that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm not talking crap. But it was. I actually have to get. I think there's over 20 moderators now and 4 admins, not including myself.
Brilliant.
Just because it was too much. You know?
Oh like, no, it is too much.
Constantly, yeah. Like I couldn't have a life outside. I'm at work and I got messages and notifications and people complaining about one thing or another. Somebody being mean and you know it was a lot. And luckily, I was able to get a good group of people that kind of took that load off my shoulders. But even now, like even still with that huge team, I'll get random messages from people.
Yeah, of like
somebody removed my comment.
Yeah, go to the top. You know, you don't get any answers. Go to the top.
Yeah.
So I stuck a few people as moderators and things on it straight away. A few guys that actually moderate my channel when I go live and things. You know, so I knew I could trust them and things. Yeah. You know, so I'm sure in about 3 months that I'll be hardly visible on it, you know, because it'll get on my nerves. But
right.
But at the moment, it's got 200 people on there. You know, I think that's like the sweet spot. It's just more. Yeah. It's just fun, and I think those 200 people are more like you know they know me personally and stuff. So it's kind of a nice place to hang out at the moment, you know.
Yeah, I only have one other group on Facebook that I moderate, and we have it capped at 20 people. So it's like. If you want to add somebody and we're at max, it means we got to kick somebody out. It's
your black ball.
Nice.
Black ball.
It's just like, yeah. I mean, it has nothing to do with tarantulas. They're just like old friends from way back. But, you know, we all try to, it's just kind of a space where we can be open about our dark sense of humor and stuff like that.
Sure.
Things we don't necessarily want the rest of the world to see.
Yeah.
Given our jobs and stuff like that.
That is,
it's kind of sometimes I kind of wish I had a tarantula group like that, you know, like
nice,
only 100 people in this group.
Exactly, a nice little small one. You know, if they've got any problems, they can sort it out between each other, sort it out for themselves.
I mean, it's such an amazing tool. Like, that's why I initially started a Facebook group because I was honestly, it was just I was getting so many questions on Instagram.
I could
crowdsource this, you know, just go ask in the group and you'll get some good information. And like that aspect of it, I think is invaluable. You know, it's really nice having that kind of space where people could ask questions and get answers and stuff like that. But it's also the internet. So, it's inevitably going to have trolls and people being sarcastic and whatnot. But yeah, it's good and bad, I guess.
It's like every single day. And this is not bashing new tarantula keepers now. This is bashing any person who comes onto the internet and thinks it's going to be something, you know, like a Disney thing. I'm like, I looked at it and they're complaining about it. And I was like, dude, are you from the past? It's the internet. Everyone's going to be nasty.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a running joke. We got like, what do you expect? You post something on the internet, inevitably you're going to get somebody that's sarcastic.
Of course.
You know, but, and that's like a line we walk in our group trying to make it friendly to user, like new keepers and people that are new to the hobby, but also at the same time, you don't want to go too far and,
no,
and be like,
you can't spoon feed people sometimes, you know,
something like that.
You can't spoon feed them as well. Sometimes people just have to do some work themselves at the end of the day, otherwise they won't learn.
Yeah.
Man.
I mean, some of the hardest lessons I learned, or the lessons I learned the best in life, came from somebody just being brutally honest.
Of course. Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? Like, tough love, just like, you're being an idiot. This is how you do
sometimes,
it right.
Sometimes, you need it. I completely agree with that. And I completely agree as well. I just want to bring it back to a point that was made in your podcast with Alex.
Sure.
Awesome little point about you know, about the hate on Facebook, you know, but from YouTubers, not from YouTubers, to YouTubers. Guys, you don't have to watch. It's that simple, you know. Happy
yeah,
days.
That's a good point.
At the end of the day, I'm not forcing you to watch my stuff.
Yeah.
So just don't watch.
Yeah, it kind of it blows. And there's people out there, and I've noticed like in my comments on Face or on YouTube, it's like three or four people that they just seem to go to everybody's
yeah.
Tarantula YouTube channel and just, you know,
slate them, yeah.
post some hateful stuff. It's like,
yeah.
you could make your own channel, you know?
Yeah. Like
that's a complete possibility.
Won't. That's the thing. They won't.
It's a lot of work.
It's huge amounts of work, man. You know, I wish I got paid to do it. It'd be lovely.
Yeah. So you've been doing YouTube for 3 years, you said,
coming
right?
up to 3 years in January, yeah.
Yeah. And I've noticed you've been doing some stuff for the Spider Shop. Is that, what's that about? What's going on there?
I've been doing like the tutorial videos and stuff for their website. I worked for the Spider Shop about 13 years ago. And the owner of the Spider Shop is a good mate of mine. Lee's a really good dude. So, you know, we hang out. He comes here, I go there. You know, he gives me some stuff to make videos on just because he hasn't got any time. And
yeah.
I have fun doing it. You know, it's nice for someone just to say, look, dude, I need this species done this way for the website, please. Can you do that? Like, yeah, man, I'll knock it up over the weekend for you, you know?
Awesome.
I lost a bit of my mojo when I was doing my own stuff with YouTube, because you find that I'm starting to do exactly the same stuff as I did a year ago, 2 years ago, you know? I'm starting to repeat stuff. And for me, that's just, I'd rather not upload than upload something that I've done before, you know?
I understand.
Yeah, so...
So for those of us in the US that aren't familiar with the Spider Shop,
so it's a bit, exactly like Fear Not Tarantulas. They're an online retailer. They've got a warehouse, uh-huh. But there's no walk-in facility. They've been in the game for, you know, best part of 20 years, probably up there with the third biggest in Europe. So they're huge.
I see a lot of people talking about them, and they seem like that's when people are talking about tarantulas, or, you know, on ordering online in the UK. Now, do they just do, like, are they located?
They're in Wales. Yeah, they're in Wales. So I'm really lucky. Like, okay. He's about 45 minute drive away from me. So that's how it makes it so easy. Do you know what I mean? So if I want to do a video on, say, I did an enclosure video, I'll just run over in the car, pick some stuff up, 45 minutes there and back, and I'll make a video.
Now, do they serve like all of Europe?
Yeah,
or,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah. yeah. So,
well,
I don't know how it's going to work post Brexit. Obviously, we're at the moment, but we have got shipping to everywhere in Europe. Basically, we can't ship to anywhere with personal people can't ship to anywhere in the States. You know, you can get licenses and stuff for it at your end and at our end, but it's the cost and it is. Far outweighs the benefit of it, unless you are someone like Fear Not Tarantulas, or, you know, Tarantulas Canada, or whoever, you know. As long as you can make your money on your end, then it's worth doing. But for one or two spiders, man, you're not paying $1,000 for, like, you know, two Selenocosmia species, Biru, or what are they called now, Biru piece, Cymoroxygorum, you know.
Yeah,
the newest... you know, the newest fad, but can you pay like a grand for a spider? I wouldn't, personally.
I think that's something a lot of people, especially here in the States, don't take into consideration. When they go and they see websites and the prices that you guys are paying over in the UK, and they're like, I'll just order from them. And it's like, yeah, but when you take into consideration all of the import fees, and, you know, you usually got to go through some kind of broker or get a lawyer. I mean, there's a lot of red tape and paperwork.
Well, I'm not up, you know, on your side. I got to be honest. I'm not up on the ins and outs of what you have to do for your side. But just for us, you know, you have to basically get it to an airport through a broker, pay the broker, pay the taxes, pay for his license, part of it, and then it gets sent over. And then you've got the same costs or more on your side then as well, isn't it?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
What's all around you, almost everywhere you look, and makes your life better? Birds. Learn all about these beautiful creatures in this wonderful new podcast called Birds of a Feather Talk Together. Two experts guide two newbies on their journey to learn more. Mallard ducks, ivory-billed woodpeckers, Hawaiian honeycreepers, blue jays, cardinals, sandhill cranes, and more. Each week we discuss a different bird and walk away with a better understanding of the birds all around us. Oh, and we have a ton of fun doing it. Listen now. You're going to like learning about these birds. I guarantee it.
Yeah. I've never done it. Like, I just what I know from talking to some people that have done imports, it seems like a very time-consuming and expensive process.
I imported it was the last year before the borders for Chile closed, and I imported like about 200 Chile roses, red and normal, a few scorpions, a couple of things like cicarius and stuff. And, I had to drive to Heathrow, which for me, the distance, right, compared to you guys, the distance is minuscule. You know, you can drive to the next town, which is like 12 hours away or something. And Heathrow is 4 hours away from me, and that's a really long drive for me.
That's how long it takes to get home, go to where I grew up, about 4 hours away.
I was speaking...
And that's in the same state.
Again, bringing him up, I really like Alex. We were talking the other day.
Yeah.
The whole of my country, right, is 145 miles long. So you can literally drive anywhere in my country within 3 hours. It's crazy, isn't it?
Wow. That's pretty wild. So you're wearing a shirt right now that says legal and sustainable.
Yes, man.
I've been seeing you've got a lot of merch like that. What's that all about?
It's just something. How can I say this without being... being a dick about it. There's a lot of, and I'm not going to name any names, right? So there's a lot of companies in Europe and in the UK that are, excuse my language, fucking shady, okay? And they do kind of go out to these places and, you know, Borneo, India,
sure. You
know, all these naughty places where you're not supposed to collect any spiders. And they bring Brazil, and they bring back stuff that we shouldn't have yet, maybe, and sell them for ridiculous amounts of money. On the, you know, this is my kind of way of getting people to just ask questions about where they're getting their spiders from. If it wasn't for us, if it wasn't for a demand, these guys wouldn't be doing it in the first place. So,
yeah.
Instead of attacking the people who kind of the poachers and the smugglers and stuff, why not just try and get an idea across to the hobbyists that we don't, you know, there are legal ways to get spiders into countries, you know, and it can be done. Mm-hmm. I had an argument with one of the other poachers or smugglers saying, well, you know, you buy them, so, and he was right. I got to be honest, he was absolutely spot on. He said, if there wasn't a need for these and a demand, then he wouldn't be going and getting these spiders from the wild, you know? It also...
Much like the drug trade.
It's exactly like the drug trade, you know? They create a demand first, and then they'll supply that demand,
right.
You know what I mean? And we create our own demand, man, by wanting the newest thing, the most colourful thing, you know, the highest priced thing. And I've seen some of these spiders... They go for ridiculous amounts of money, and then within 2 months, the price crashed. And, you know, they can't even sell them anymore because they found out that, when you get them into this country, you've just got another pot of dirt, exactly the same as if you've got a lividus, you know, for £30 lividus for a £300 birupees. You know, they're the same. You'll never see it. So it doesn't matter if it's blue or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
Typhocleana is another thing. You know, the prices in Europe have dropped incredibly, hugely. Spiderling was £500. What's that? About $800, isn't it? $900 or something? I don't know. I don't know the conversion rates, but you know, £500 is a lot of money for a 0.5 of a centimeter spider.
Last time I checked, they were around $600 in the US, but it changes a lot. Like the prices has been going down as more people are breeding them. And I mean, we've kind of like walked into a very controversial subject. I think a lot of people in the tarantula hobby really try to stay away from. I made a video on that species, the T. celadonia, about whether it's illegal or not in our country, and caught a lot of flack about
that. Yeah,
you know, it's like some people were like, you know, thank you for getting this information out there. Other people, especially those that are selling them,
were like, dude, them,
got very mad.
Like,
yeah, and that's. I'm like, hey, I didn't call anybody out. I'm not judging anybody, but I'm just saying, you know, we're creating our own problems in a lot of ways. You know, there's got to be legal
ways.
There is legal ways of doing it.
Richard, you know, these are the conversations we should be having all the time. It's not just like, you know, one person like yourself or me just to make a video and then, you know, I get a few views, you get a few views, and then it goes away again. It's a big problem, you know, and it's not just a big problem for our hobby because, trust me, they are looking at anything just to stop the exotics pet trade, you know. But
yeah,
it's super difficult, you know, because for science as well, once that spider comes in illegally without a type being popped into a museum piece, you know, without any actual import papers or approvals, you know, the government has said you're allowed to go and collect them basically in that country, yeah?
Sure.
Then a taxonomist can't touch that spider to classify it, to describe it, you know? And that happened, and it was a massive, massive blow for the hobby in the kind of UK and Europe. That happened with the Birrupes cymeroxygorum. The two taxonomists that described it got into a lot of trouble because it was illegally collected, and they didn't know. They obviously that's a hot spider. You want to describe that spider, get your name on that. So they just like, we'll describe that, and then it turns out that it was all illegal.
I mean, and it's also the conservation aspect of it too. You know, like if we're supporting a black trade, you know, people. Or black market trade, I guess that would be the right word. Going out and poaching these spiders and bringing them, like, you know, they're not caring about conservation.
Nope.
They're just going and grabbing whatever they can, whenever they can, as much as they can, you know. And it's detrimental, you know, for the you know, the wild tarantulas.
Yeah, and it's super sad, you know, as well, you know, for the people that live in that area as well, because sometimes in a lot of places like Mexico and Chile, especially, it was a massive trade. And supported a lot of small towns, you know, in the area. When someone from Europe, like us, or someone from America, it doesn't matter, just a smuggler or a poacher goes in and absolutely strips an area, then it's going to take a few years for that to come back for those spiders. Yeah, they produce hundreds and thousands of, you know, spiderlings, but those spiders take time to grow to be adults again, you know. And that's their livelihood, especially like in Asia and stuff, where, you know, another controversial thing, they do eat them, you know. They go in and they strip everything for the market that day, and it takes years for it to come back. It's really, really sad.
Yeah, I agree. Real quick, before, just to decide, have you ever eaten a tarantula?
Yes, I would. Yeah. I've done it both in Asia, and I've had one of those tins you can get from Amazon, you know, a Phonopelma simani, and they're Albus striatus, and they're the Haplopelma, the Cyropogopus. Disgusting, the one in the tin is. The one cooked properly is lovely.
Oh, okay. I've always wondered. I've never had the guts to do it. Especially
the one in the tin is stinking, like, don't do that at all. So if you do travel, then, you know, try it out. Why not? I know. I love these animals. Don't get me wrong, people. All right. I know. I'm sounding like a monster. You're eating my pets, but I'm not. You know, you just want to try what the locals do. And it's important, you know.
Yeah, I think if I was somewhere where it was street food or something, they were being prepared, I would probably give it a try, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, you know.
But
it's a good thing. So, coming back to it, all this is getting people just to have a bit of a think, you know, where do my spiders come from? And if you look at yourself and you go, I don't care where my spiders come from, well, you're the problem. Sorry. You know?
Yeah. I mean, even here in the US, there's issues with wild caught tarantulas that are native. Oh,
the Phonopelmas and stuff.
You know? And there's a, and that can be a big controversy as well. Cause it's, you know, it's, those can take so long to grow. And some people just have them in their backyard and they're like, well, what's the big deal? Yeah. You know? And it's kind of hard to argue. But my big thing, especially with the Afanopelmas here in the US, is a lot of them that are wild caught and being sold are actually males that they're just selling
immature
like sex
males
or something
like
that. Or they have, they've got some health issues, you know, like they've got
parasites
or nematodes or, you know, yeah. And it just doesn't seem like a very safe thing. And I actually had one, I think more than once. I think there's a couple of tarantulas in my collection that were ended up being wild caught.
And this isn't, Richard, this is not about wild caught, you know, the is wild caught good or not? Because wild caught does have its place sometimes, you know. But I agree, it's probably best for the average Joe, the average keeper, to go as much captive bred as possible. You know, you'll cut, like you said, you'll cut right. all those problems out straight away. You know, just for instance, a little aside, I once bought at the time it was Haplopelma lividus, from Asia, wild caught spider.
Okay.
Had it for 4 weeks and a giant larva exploded out of it. So it had an internal parasite.
Oh
yeah. So I tried to keep Jeez. That larva to make sure to see if it pupated and then what kind of, I think it was a wasp. Yeah. But see what actually came out of it. But it just outside of the animal, it just withered and died. But yeah, it was huge. It was like the size of my thumb.
Yeah. Oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah. It was cool.
That's
bad, but cool.
Yeah. There's been a string, especially lately, of people getting their first tarantulas from pet stores or some pet expos. You know, like we'll have reptile expos and there are people like Fear Not Tarantulas or Bitsy Spiders, or there's a lot of different tarantula dealers that go to these reptile expos and sell tarantulas. But there's also guys that just sell geckos or snakes or something like that, that at the end of their table, they'll have three or four different tarantulas, you know, with just like common names on it. They don't know anything about them. People have bought those, brought them home. And especially like curly hairs. I mean, they're all like usually new world species, but within a month they got an egg
well caught. Yeah.
It's like a viable egg. So it's like, yeah. So that was a wild caught tarantula. And then that's when I'm like, that's an issue, you know, because that would have had its egg sac in the wild and been able to propagate its species in its natural environment. And we robbed not just that one
generations,
but possibly hundreds of. Yeah,
but it's also good for our hobby, you know, to have an extra egg sack into the hobby as well. You know, I'll never, ever, ever say for new hobbyists not to breed their spiders, because like a lot of people go, okay. Oh, you know, you're too much of a noob. You shouldn't breed spiders if you don't know what you're doing. You know.
Yeah.
If you've got two of the same spider, and it's not very usually it's not difficult to know. They're the same spider, then breed them.
Yeah.
Or if you've got a wild caught egg sack, happy days, you know. A lot of people are like, oh, you've got to give that egg sack away, you know, to someone who knows what they're doing. I got to be honest, guys, it's not really difficult. You know, you just leave it alone. do its thing.
I think I talked about that one of my last podcasts was, you know, one of the best pieces of advice when keeping tarantulas is just
don't do anything.
Like, give them some space. Yeah.
I spend like six out of seven days in my spoiler room just looking in and going, yep, it's still there. And then letting walking out.
Yeah. Now with the whole Brazilian species, just controversy, I guess. Like, I don't know how it was over there, but it got crazy over here. Like it was, T. Celadonia came in. Some of them got confiscated by Fish and Wildlife Services. And then it turned into this whole thing of, well, we shouldn't do any Brazilian species anywhere. And there was like this big movement, people pulling all their Brazilian species off their websites. You couldn't sell them in Facebook groups. Like, the pendulum swung way the other way. And everybody got really panicked, thought the feds were going to come kicking in their doors, taking their, it's just like, you know, it got wild and it's kind of like evened out now. It's not as crazy, but there was literally a call to bans, like to just self-regulate in the hobby and stop selling all Brazilian species, even ones that have been here for over a decade.
I think with regards to that, you guys have got the Lacey Act of new, you know, I think with the Pulchra, you know, Typhocleana situation out there, it was more like, oh shit, we don't want them to take everything away from us, you know. So you can appreciate that with some people, but honestly, most of the stuff, you know, you just write it out. You know, it happens everywhere. It happens with almost every species. More recently, I've got to be honest, it's much, much better. There's a lot more legal stuff happening. Back in the day, that's how spiders came into the hobby, like end of, you know, or mostly all post-Letheria were smuggled out at one point, you know, and established in the hobby. But just because it was done in the past doesn't mean we should do it now. You know, we're a different, it's a different time. It's a different, different planet, isn't it, than it was 30 years ago.
That's very true. And when I was talking about, especially the T. celadonia, all the controversy, at least on my end, started from, I knew there was a guy in our Facebook group that worked for Fish and Wildlife Services. And he also was a keeper. So, you know, I didn't want to like, you because of your day job, you can't be part of our group. It just seemed discriminatory or something. Like I wouldn't want someone to do that to me, but I was like, you can't come in here, like, because this is a hot issue and they just confiscated some. I don't want people coming in here posting that they have some for sale, because I don't want any kind of liability. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know how that stuff works, but I didn't
exactly.
Want to be part
of this. No, mostly, all times probably best is to, you know, keep your head down, especially when these things explode.
Yeah. It was some of the early, like I had a pretty rough 20s. Like it was, I don't remember a lot of it, but it was rough. And someone told me when I was coming out the other end of it, like some really good advice. And it was, if you don't want to get framed, stay out of the picture.
Perfect.
It's like, that's what I want to do here. I am staying out of the picture. And because of that, I got a lot of hate. A lot of people were really upset. And I didn't quite understand it until, you know, it all just kind of came down to money. You know, people were trying to make money and felt like I was trying to stand in their way. And I could understand some of the people, like the other side of the coin, because at the time the rainforest in Brazil, you know, they're being destroyed, burnt down. You know, it's like they're not allowing these species to be exported because, you know, they're saying conservation reasons or, you know, whatever the reason is, but at the same time,
they're
destroying their natural habitat.
Yeah, they're not looking after their own place.
It's a moral dilemma.
No, you can understand. You can understand, you know, looking at that. But the Brazil thing was insane. It didn't really resonate over you as because, you know, a lot of the Facebook groups, they're all set up by you guys, aren't they, really? I got to be honest. There's a few UK ones, but they've usually got UK written at the end of the name of the group.
Yeah.
But like, it was all hot. And I can really feel for the people who brought them in. It's because they came from Europe, let's be honest, didn't they? You know?
Yeah.
Well, every
you guys are the source of all of our problems.
We're patient zero every time.
I'm just kidding.
But it came from Europe. It's going to cost those guys so much money to get it into the UK, into the US, right? And then all of a sudden, they're sitting on 100 Typhocleana celadonia that they can't sell, you know? It's a big hole to fill, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? You want to get yourself back in the black as much as you can. And if you're sitting on thousands and thousands of dollars of spiders and you can't shift them, what are you going to do with them? You know, well, you can keep them for yourself and breed them, and hopefully the laws change in like 2 to 3 years. But
but it's also kind of when you're talking about supply and demand, the more you breed them, the more you have available waiting for them to be legal to sell, the cheaper you're going to have to sell them for. Yeah. You know, it's you're driving your own prices down. And, you know, I felt for, there were some people that they didn't even get them. Like they ordered them and they got confiscated. And I can only imagine. Like that was a business decision, you know. It was an investment. I'm going to bring these in. I'm going to flip them and make, you know, a profit so that I can continue my business. And that's
insane, isn't it?
You know,
of course,
I feel for those people. Like I don't agree with it.
At the end of the day, it's exactly the same as the guy in the shop at the end of the street. He's providing a product. You know, it's his livelihood. You can't, as long as things are being done properly and being done legally, right? I have absolutely no problem with the trade. You know, because I've seen how the trade can work when you want to do it sustainably. You can work with little towns in, like I said, little towns in Chile. You can be their main source of income. You can help them. And they will do you, you know, you should do little things and often rather than one giant clear out of stuff. It's just sensible, you know. Yeah. And that's what's not happening with a lot of European sellers are just not thinking about the bigger picture, because there's going to be nothing to collect in like 10 years time, or they're going to ban us, they're going to stop us from keeping any animals, and then you can't even sell your bread and butter, you know, a Phonopelma anymore. You could just got to blanket ban on everything, which is and this is going to sound awful as well, but the main reason I do this is because I don't want anyone telling me that I can't keep spiders. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so that's the thing. I love this hobby. Even if I didn't have all this online presence, these were here long before YouTube was here, you know? And they'll be here long after YouTube was finished with me as well, which, you know, I'm starting to get to the end of, I think. No, I'm joking.
But I think one of the hardest or the most frustrating things here in the United States is just how there's no consistency in how a lot of these laws are applied. So you think you're doing something legally
until they slap the cuffs on you.
Fish and Wildlife or Customs or whatever is like, nope, that's not legal anymore. It's like, well, nothing changed. You know, it's just their interpretation of the law or their decision to enforce a law they haven't enforced in decades. All of a sudden, and there's no recourse. There's no legal recourse in a lot of ways. So that's very frustrating. It'd be nice to be able to have some kind of clear, concise.
There's no real precedent with you guys. So one good thing about the European stuff is that because it's been established for a lot longer, really, as it is now, it's not huge, but it's pretty damn big. There's a lot of legal precedent, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people have obviously been to court and stuff and won or lost. And there's not that in America yet, but there will be. So you guys will be come out. You'll come out on the end. Yeah, you'll come out the other side, and it'll be exactly like this. There won't be any difference.
I look forward to that. There's some organizations like US Art. I mean, they focus mainly on reptiles and amphibians, but they're starting to take up some cause for tarantulas and other invertebrates as well. And you know, they've got a pretty good track record of winning. Like they just won a case down in Florida. They had passed some kind of law where I mean, I'm talking about stuff I don't know anything about, but there were certain types of venomous snakes they weren't allowed to keep. And I don't even know if they were letting people like kind of be grandfathered in on that. It was like, you either got to get a permit and pay a lot of money for that permit every year or get rid of them. And they came in and fought that lawsuit, ended up winning and giving those people that right back. But you know, where I live in West Virginia, like our state motto is Mountaineers are always free, and they take it to an extreme. Sometimes it's not maybe the best. It's like you got a lot of personal freedoms, but that also means you can legally keep a kangaroo and there's been people that have had bears and lions and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So don't worry too much about, you know, my tarantulas, at least as far as like state laws or anything like that, kind of banning it. But I do kind of worry. And I think something a lot of people, at least here in the US, don't take into consideration is your city laws. Like there's some local laws that if you're within city limits, they'll require you to get permits or won't let you to keep some types of venomous animals. And you don't realize that until, and that was one of the reasons I was really hesitant about having a YouTube channel is because I was like, I don't want to draw attention to myself. You know, I don't want to become a target. And, but I had to do a lot of research, make sure I was actually on the right side of the law.
I'm cool.
So we'll do this.
Well, it's like, there's no law against it, in the UK. There is that, dangerous wild animals, license that, you know, if you yourself, I was very, very jealous, had the Centroides, all the babies and the bark scorpions. Brilliant. I love them. Yeah. And it's illegal for me to keep them here. And unless I pay £1,000 a year for a license, you know?
Yeah. Ouch. Yeah. They're actually right here. They're like the closest enclosure to my desk. I really enjoy them.
So much work though, when they start dropping. Yeah.
The frustrating. Oh yeah. That's, It's like, I really like the communal aspect of keeping these scorpions, but the constant breeding and babies is already becoming overwhelming. It's like,
is that species also pathogenic as well?
That's up for debate. I've been doing a lot of research on it because there was some people saying that it was like originally they were in Cuba, and I guess the Cuban variety, the species but the ones that they're people have, you know, seen in Florida and throughout the Southwest or Southeast, or even in like Northeast South America. That's very complicated to work out in my brain. There's been no recorded instances of parthenogenesis with those. So it's just the ones native to Cuba that I guess there's ever been. But even like trying to find that record of like, you know, that report. I was able to find people that said they had read it or seen it or whatever. So I can't confirm or deny anything. I know that mine have not.
Yeah.
There's been
nothing that you've noticed anyway, isn't it? And obviously, these are going to be wild caught, aren't they? They've got to be. Yeah. So they're gonna be grafted anyway.
I mean, they're right. I mean, a lot of these scorpions, like the Arizona, they're pests in Florida and Arizona. They call Terminex to come out and get rid of them in their house. Yeah. It's like, well, I'm trying to sell these babies. Like, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive. I mean, I'm not doing it because I
want to make
money.
Need the space, man.
I can't take care of them. Like, I got to get rid of them somehow. So I just shipped a bunch of, I think I sent like 100 of them to Fear Not Tarantulas, and she sold them for me. And but it's, I mean, I probably got another 100 already. And I'm like, I gotta do something with these. Like, this is not sustainable. Like, there's not that many people.
It's
that
not,
want
it's not like you can give them away in a competition either, is it?
Right. I'd go broke trying to get just in shipping and boxing.
Oh man, expensive.
So you sell tarantulas sometimes, do you?
Only things that I've bred, or sometimes I've got like a mature male or something that I usually do 50-50s. If I've got a mature male, I'll send him off, but if no one wants him, then I'll put one up for sale, you know, but I usually use them first. I've got a lot of, you see things in the background here. There's things in the nets over there. There, there's jumping spiders, the Phidippus regius. There's three egg sacs there. There's also Macrothelli calpiana inside it, the Spanish funnel web that's got an egg sac with it now. All these things are wild caught, you know, but then they dropped egg sacs. I haven't actually paired these up myself. Behind me, this side, I got a bad back. This side is a Dolomedes, a fishing spider. I know, sorry, I'm doing this, guys. I'm doing a podcast. This is, behind me, there's a fishing spider with an egg sac again, which is hatching. So it's just things that if it happens, it happens. And, you know, I'm not charging extortionate amounts for anything. So, and if no one buys it, I don't mind. I'll just keep it anyway. So,
okay. Yeah, I was checking out your website a few weeks ago and saw that you had a little section of like spiders that you would list for sale.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if you were like getting into the breeding selling game or if it was just kind of clearing out what you don't need or
use. That's it. I used to sell spiders for my living, and I got to be honest, man, it is really, really, really hard. You know,
I can only imagine
for the return you get so much work and so much social media work, which I'm really trying to get away from as well.
Social media can be pretty toxic, that's for sure. And it's frustrating because personally, I rarely post anything on my personal Facebook page anymore. Like it's pretty much all, what's the right word?
No, don't worry.
Promotion or something like that. I can't think of the right word, you know, but it seems to be, there's definitely a negative kind of, effect that I find when I spend too much time on social media.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially like if for instance you were selling spiders and you've got to constantly answer those messages to come through to start with, you're spamming all the groups anyway, so everyone thinks you're a dickhead for doing that.
Yeah,
you know, it's just there's no win for me, you know, anymore. You know, as I say, we're approaching 40 years old, man. It's a young man's game.
Yeah.
And I personally probably don't know any spider sellers that will be millionaires. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to make you rich. So just do it because it guarantees them a certain lifestyle. And they love animals, isn't it? That's what happens.
Yeah. I mean, doing what you love, at least what I've learned quickly approaching 40, I would rather do something I love, that I enjoy going to work every day and don't make very much money doing it, than something I hate or that's frustrating or stressful and making good money.
Recently, I've
kind of had that issue. I enjoyed the guy I worked for. And initially I enjoyed the work, but it just started the job, like the whole business started kind of veering off in this direction that was just really stressful every day, doing stuff that, like, I mean, we didn't do anything illegal, but like morally I was just having some conflict about, you know, some of the business that we were involved in. And I was working a lot, you know, like,
yeah, man.
Scheduled 45 hours, usually doing 50, 55. And I like had no time for my family. Trying to get a video out every week was, you know, next to impossible. Like, it was just very stressful. So I was like really happy when started to get to a point with content creation where it was making enough money that I could be like, I don't really need to do a 45, 50 hours a week, you know, just to make money to live.
Oh man, I'm really happy for you. That's cool.
But I think that's one reason I've been like really advocating for a lot of tarantula dealers instead of like spamming Facebook and paying Facebook for ads, you know, sponsor creators. Pay for ads on channels, because you're going to be hitting people that want to buy tarantulas. If they're watching my video or your video, they're obviously interested.
Instantly, you know, targeted, isn't it? Let's be honest. It just makes sense.
And it's keeping that kind of that money in our ecosystem, you know, like, people that pay me to run an ad or mention their business, a lot of times that money is going into buying more tarantulas or enclosures or something like that. You know, it's
the upkeep,
so it keeps it in there instead of, you know, paying Google and Facebook like thousands of dollars.
And if there's anyone listening out there who wants to do that with my channel, I am open. I will take anyone's money, gold teeth, anything.
There you go. And I feel like the hobby itself, I don't know how it is over on your side of the world, but it really seems to be growing and developing at almost an exponential rate lately.
Yeah,
it's like huge. A lot more people are getting into it. There's a lot more. Like, Facebook groups are popping up every day for tarantulas. YouTube channels are popping up all over. It seems like it's not just growing, but it's becoming more accepted. Is that something that you've seen over
there? Yeah, definitely. It is. Well, it's always been kind of accepted. It's always been there, really, all my life, you know, the hobby. Yeah. But I have seen, especially the last, like, 18 months, YouTube especially, and as, like you said, the Facebook groups have just exploded, and it's going to be it's going to start getting extremely difficult for new content creators to be seen, you know, with just the amount of people who are doing it at the moment. You know, you got to remember as well, it takes a lot.
That's very true.
It doesn't take anything at all to point a camera at the spider, you know, but to make it decent to watch, to make it fun to watch, to get it out there to people who need to see it, that's the real trouble, isn't it? Let's be honest. That's where it becomes hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Breaking through that algorithm to get suggested is, I probably spend as much time working on keywords and searchable content and all that kind of stuff than I do actually making the video.
I try so hard. Yeah. No, I just sit there at night thinking about, like, how does that algorithm work? Because I'll make, for instance, I'll make a video over it just off the top of my head in the spider room by pointing my phone at it, and I'll get like thousands of views, and then I would spend like 3 days making a video, and like, you know, 12 people will see it. It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm not the only one that stays up at night thinking about that.
Yeah, no.
It can be stressful.
Bothers me.
And it's one of the reasons I started the channel is because, you know, I enjoy your channel a lot. I like watching
Thanks,
your videos.
Man.
There's some
Thanks.
Other YouTubes out there I really enjoy. But there was a specific type of content, you know, like, because I watch a lot of YouTube on all other topics, you know, like, it's, I feel like I graduated from YouTube university. Anything I know how to do in life is because I was watching how-to videos on YouTube, you know, and
why not, man?
There was a level of content that I enjoyed watching that I didn't feel like at the time I mean, it was mainly guys making videos with cell phones and stuff like that. And I was like, there's not a lot of like high quality cinematic type. So I got, after a, like a year or two of like wishing somebody would do it, I was like, maybe I should do it.
Yeah.
What's that quote? Be the change you want to see in the world. I was like, I'll do it. And I have no idea how to use a camera. So we'll figure this out and just kind of learn as we go from, you know, and that's something I learned from watching YouTube videos. You know, I was watching YouTube videos on how to shoot YouTube videos. It was a weird kind of.
down the rabbit hole.
But I've like, yeah. So I was working really hard on trying to get that type of quality, and because that's what I wanted to see, and that's what I wanted other channels to kind of do, and so that I could watch them and enjoy them. But now I find like, I'll call him out. Alex, I've been watching. Have you seen Alex's couple of latest videos? The Tarantula Haven?
I haven't watched any YouTube at all this week.
Oh, okay. He's got like these Halloween special species spotlights. You should check him out.
I saw him posted it.
He got a new camera, got some new lights, and they're good videos. I really enjoyed them. But I was watching them like almost pissed off. Like, this son of a bitch totally ripped off my stuff.
He's ripping then, you off.
And I was like,
you're supposed to be my mate,
that's,
man.
That's what I wanted. he was asking me, I was like giving him it, like, this is how I do this. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we were having conversations about how to do this. So like, that was my initial, anytime I see, and it's not just, and there's a lot of other YouTube channels that I'm like, oh, wow, they're really stepping up their game. This is awesome. But then there's that flash of like, you totally ripped me off.
Like your channel,
like, man,
your channel, I gotta be honest, is probably the best looking channel on spiders on YouTube. It just crisp and lush. I love it. But so I'll suck up to you for a little bit. I said no problem.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
but it was just a weird kind of cognitive dissonance that was going on in my mind. Like, I want to help people make the best videos they can, but then when they do that, I'm like, what the hell, man? Now I got to work harder.
That's the case, though, isn't it? It's always like, sense. Oh, we got to do something better, something pushing it all the time.
Yeah.
So, like I said earlier, I've decided probably the last couple of weeks, if I haven't got anything to upload, I'm not forcing it anymore. You know, I'm not like looking for things.
That's probably
I'm not
healthy.
Looking for things to get two videos out a week or whatever. So now if there's something happening and it's cool, I'll film it. And then, but if there's nothing happening, I'm not going to just stand in the spider room going, hi there, guys, I'm Garth from Arachno Tube. There's nothing going on today. Do you know what I mean? It's like, just to get a video out, you know?
Yeah, I understand. I mean, and I think that as far as the algorithm's concerned, YouTube probably won't I think as far as your viewers are concerned, they would much rather watch sporadic, you know, or, you know, maybe it's not sporadic, but more time in between videos, but those videos have good content.
I agree. I was talking to the missus, and the way it's going to go is that I can either smash the algorithm, you know, and at the end of the day, I don't care about getting massive, you know. I'm doing this anyway. I'm doing this from my front bedroom. Do you know what I mean? There's a car going past now. You know, it's real life. It's not YouTube life, like, you know. I smash the algorithm, upload frequently, but it's got absolutely zero content, proper content to it, I'm going to burn out in 18 months, 2 years, and there'll be no channel at all.
Yeah,
you know, I'd rather do one video every 14 days or something, 10 to 14 days, and enjoy making it, than have, it's this whole work ethos thing again, isn't it? You know, work for yourself, not feel that you are being worked by YouTube. You know, I don't want to feel like a workhorse. Right. I want to feel like I'm doing this for a laugh, doing this for the good times, like for the spiders and stuff.
Yeah, I totally feel that. There was, I guess it was August. I took a month off from making content because I was just burned out. Like, I was working too much and I wasn't getting much sleep because I get home, have dinner with the family, spend some time with my wife and kid, and then like it'd be 9 o'clock.
Come in the spider room.
And yeah, then I come downstairs and be filming and editing and just taking care of everything. And it would be up till 2 or 3 in the morning. And then 5 hours later, wake up to start the day, take the kid to school and have breakfast and go to work. And it was like, you know, 4 or 5 hours of sleep. And especially like I upload on Tuesdays. So Monday night, sometimes I'd be up to 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, just getting the video to render and upload. And it was, I was, I, he ended up having to go to the doctor and health issues. And he's like, well, you're not getting enough sleep. You know, your stress is too high. You gotta make some changes. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to do that. Like, this is, I've been working really hard to try and streamline the process and not spend as much time. But my wife and kid were like, my kid said
work
something.
Work-life balance, like, man. That's what you need, isn't it?
I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was like, I feel like, you know, my stepdad never spends any time with me. And I was like, And he didn't know I was hearing him. Like, he was playing video games, talking to his friend over his headset. And I just heard that. I was like, ouch. I'm sitting here at that time editing a video. I'm like, you know, he's right.
Pause on that.
Because I've been focused on this.
Yeah, man. But I got to be honest. I don't know how I feel about that now. Obviously, but that's me, my channel, you know, doesn't get the views that yours does, you know. If then I may be, you know, starting to make decent amounts of money where I can sort of think about doing this for a living, then, gosh, I don't know. I'd be torn, you know. It just, yeah, it's difficult, sure, isn't it? You've got to only do what you do right now, you man. Don't, so many of my friends who are YouTubers are going, I need to make this, you know, and there's nothing wrong with having like dreams and passions and stuff, but they go in, I need to make this my job, you know, that's what I'm striving for. And not many people do. That's the, you know, that's the reality of the situation. How about let's do it because you enjoy it, and then maybe the rest of the stuff will just follow on afterwards. And but yeah, I'm super jealous of you. That's what was basically what I'm trying to say.
Thanks. I never did this thinking like I might make money and try to start a career. It was more of a, I just want to get some content out there that I enjoy watching. And it seemed like a more efficient way of, you know, instead of answering the same question 100 times in messages, like, I'll just make a video on it and put that and then just direct people to that video. And it started out, I was just doing something that I enjoy doing, and that stuff kind of fell into place, I guess. Like, it started getting more popular, getting more views, but then it shifted and it turned to like, I got to work the algorithm. I got to upload constantly. I got to, you know, it went from doing something that I enjoyed doing and, you know, to something that I felt obligated.
Absolutely.
To do
it.
That's kind of why I had to take a break for a little bit and try and reassess the situation and figure out exactly what's going on. But you mentioned something earlier, about, you know, if there's no content, if there's nothing going on in your tarantula room, you know, what's the point of making a video? And I remembered one of your videos I had watched, and I missed a video you made later on about it, but you did have a orb weave spider and like it was like a free roam enclosure or something like that. Like, whatever happened with that?
Well,
because I saw a video, it escaped, or it like it got off of its.
Are
you still doing that, or what's that?
No, man. Unfortunately, she died. She was an adult when she came here, wild caught, and she lasted about 4 or 5 months. No, about 4 months, and then I found that she dropped off her web. But that was insane, man. I loved that. Just one of my favorite videos I've ever made. That is. You could just see it on my face when I'm standing next to her. And I'm just like, just clear, you know, huge smile on my face. And I'm like, look, the size of this spider is in my room. It was over there, that side of the wall. And I just popped it there and left it there. And she stayed, as I said, for months. She moved over to the other side of the room at one point. And that's when you kind of go like, no, have I left the door open? You know. But no, she stayed in the room. She was good. She did really, really, really very well. Cool. Yeah, it was super cool. And something I'm definitely going to be doing, you know, probably for the rest of my life. Every time I get an orb weaver, it was Nephila, Pilipes. Every time I get one, I will just leave it free roam.
You still have a scorpion on your desk?
Yep. Yeah. Not here at the moment on my other desk, or my desk buddy. I've got a Smilagenaris mesonensis. So, I don't know what the common name for it is. Like, I keep a dune scorpion. Is it Arizona dune scorpion?
Yeah. Yes. I got a few.
They're cool. Yeah, yeah. They're, you know. And I've got a couple of other Arizona kind of scorpions behind me. You know, your usual, like, Hadrurus arizonensis. Your Paravajovis. I really like the I really like those little angry little scorpions from Arizona. I think they've got so much character.
Stripes, the devil
yeah, the devil scorps. I think they've got so much character. They're just so angry. Small man syndrome. They're just like everything. They attack anything. It's great. I love it.
Yeah. One of mine just had a baby.
Awesome.
He's had a brood.
That's what I, my two, so I've got two, Paravajovis, I can't even remember, Confucius and something else. And they're both female, they're both wild caught, and they're both really, really fat. So I'm hoping that they're gravid, because that would be well cool.
Do you have any reptiles?
Well, I'm not a massive fan of reptiles, but the missus wanted a snake, so... we got her the chili rose of the snake world. We got her a ball python. That's downstairs. He's cool. He's called Keith.
Keith the snake. I got a snake called Frank.
Frank's a good name for a snake.
And the other one is Ethel. My wife names them. So we got that's Keith, cool. Ethel, Nova, and not Keith. That's yours. Frank, no, Nola, Ethel, and I have a milk snake that I feel like my son named it, but I can never remember what he named it. So. I just refer to it as the milk snake. And you don't really see it much anyways, but...
No. Yeah. That's cool. Keith is a bit of a legend in Wales. He went to... last year, he went, before all this COVID stuff, he went to Cardiff Natural History Museum to spend 6 months there educating children, yeah. So that was cool. He's Keith's a legend.
Yeah, that's very cool. So have you had... I get this question a lot. People ask like how often my tarantulas escape, or how do you rescue or recapture an escaped tarantula? Have you had any issues with that in your collection?
I've had a couple of escapes over the years. Usually, I got to be honest, always my fault. I'm feeding, rushing, and just leave a lid off, and then I tend to lose scorpions more than anything else. I've never lost one and really? I not found it, but sometimes it has taken like, you know, a couple of weeks of like taking everything apart. One as well you don't want is a giant mature male Postlethereum ruffulata waking you up by crawling over your chest.
Oh yeah. So, that happened to you?
Yeah. So I put the male and the female in together to pair, and I must have just left a small gap, and he got out. She was in there. She didn't move, but he was in there, and he walked across my chest.
Now, do you have any cats?
Yes, two cats.
Do they have access to your tarantula room?
Not at all. No. I'm quite lucky. I've got a door that closes hard, so I'm just waiting every day on Facebook to see it. Oops, my cat smashed the tank. It's kind of one we see all the time, isn't it? And then, the hate they get after that. Oh, it's just venom.
People are not forgiving.
Yeah. You see,
I have two cats. Right. Well, we just had one cat, and recently my wife got a second cat. And luckily that cat, it's still young, and it's, for whatever reason, like it was a rescue, and it is scared to death to go downstairs. I don't know if it can smell the snakes or bad experience with the basement in its past, but... You try to bring it downstairs and it starts, you know, scratching you.
Freaking out, so
it stays out of here.
Well, that's good.
My other cat's just too lazy not to do anything. But
I love cats like that. Like that's what I want to be when I grow up.
If something gets out, like he is a cricket hunter, like inevitably crickets escape when I'm feeding.
Yeah, of course.
And he will hunt them down and kill them. So my biggest fear is if something were to get out, like he would be on it, you know, like white on rice. Yeah, it would be cat food.
Yeah, definitely.
So, and I try to like get it set up to where they don't have access to this room, but unfortunately for them to be able to get to their litter box, they have to come through this room. So trying to figure something out, because that inevitably that little cat is going to be brave enough to come down.
Yeah,
here,
at some point.
I don't want there to be any problems.
Yeah, and cats are cats, so,
I'm trying to figure something out.
Cats are cats. You know, if you don't want them to do anything, you know, you can't teach a cat, can you? You know what I mean? A cat does what it wants.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's just its natural instinct. And I feel bad for people that, you know, their enclosures get knocked over you know, their cat eats their tarantula. In fact, I had a tarantula in one of those, I don't know if they sell them out in the UK, the Zoomed creature enclosures.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like these long, they're not very tall, and it's just like, a screen lid all the way across, fine mesh screen. And I had a tarantula in there, and I just did the screen was so thin and flimsy. I was like, this tarantula could chew through here. So I had rehoused it, and I put it into this tarantula cribs enclosure. You know, it's like an all acrylic kind of magnet locking enclosure. I really like them, but I hadn't moved its old enclosure off the shelf yet. Came in from work, and I guess the cat was trying to figure out what happened to the tarantula. Cause sometimes it'll sit there and just like wash through the glass, but never really bothers them. But it was sitting on top of it. And I was like, Bo, get off there. And as soon as I said that, it went to jump, and the screen just ripped. So like if the tarantula had been in there, the cat would have like landed on it. Yeah. You know, so I was like, Jesus, I'm not going to use those enclosures now.
No. Yeah.
At least, you know, anywhere that the cat could get on them. But yeah, it can be risky to have.
Yeah. Yeah. I say because of their nature and their attitude, isn't it? They don't give a shit. Let's be honest. Yeah. They're cats. They're going where they want. But the door here closes very, very tight. We've got a new puppy as well, so I've got to make sure that the door is closed. Yeah.
What kind of dog did you get?
A Springer Spaniel.
Okay.
We've got two dogs as well, so we've got a Springer Spaniel and a Cocker Spaniel. We're Spaniel people. It's
Cocker Spaniel was my first dog.
Crazy dogs, man. Crazy dogs.
Yeah.
They've been to the beach today, so the house is absolutely stinking of sea and sand. And
nice.
That's not bad, man. It's their house.
Yeah. I've got a Puggle.
Okay.
And which is like a mix between a pug and a beagle. And then a European chocolate lab.
The chocolate labs, man.
My wife has, she is beautiful. But it's my wife has this affinity for adopting old dogs. You know what I mean? Find a dog at the rescue, or you know, somebody's fostering that's maybe got 4 or 5 years left, and nobody's adopting it. Those are the ones. So we're like a geriatric.
Oh no, but that's beautiful though. That is, you know, give the dog the best time before its time's up. That's lovely. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, but there's also the other side of that coin.
Yeah, you got to deal with
it. You get attached to a dog that lives maybe 3 or 4 years, and those last few years, they usually have some health problems.
Of course, and it's frustrating, expensive as well. You know, everything's like that.
The Puggle that we have, that one was, I think she was like 2 when we got her. So that was like the only one we've gotten that was young. But it was because we had another old Puggle, and she wanted to have a friend, I guess, for the old one. So, but yeah, it's, I'm a big fan of dogs, and luckily my dogs, they could care less about the tarantula.
Yeah, no, our dogs don't care.
It's like they don't even see them.
No, I sometimes film with the new puppy in the room here with me. And I've got about 35 minutes of just outtakes at the moment of me just shouting and swearing at the dog because he's like stealing sling pots and stuff. And
yeah.
But yeah.
So do you watch any other, what do they call them, pet tubers? Like any other channels that deal with snakes or?
No, not really. I got to be honest, most of my time on YouTube is spent either like listening to music, seeing music videos, or like I like a couple of guys. Like I like Aussie Man, that's pretty cool. He's cool. But it's mostly just drum videos, man. Just watching people play drums for 12 hours.
I saw you shared, I think it was you, a video from Frog Leap Studios.
Oh, yeah.
Was that you?
Leo's.
Yeah. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. DuckTales. Yeah. Woo!
I just recently discovered that channel.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Maybe a month or so ago, and I got hooked. I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Now that's the like YouTube channel I want, but with spiders. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be cool.
Just having a laugh with your brother and stuff.
There seems to be a lot of controversy in the pet tuber community, and I kind of like that the tarantula niche really isn't involved in that at all. Like there's not a lot of, you know, like with the tropical fish people and the snake people, and there's just a lot of drama and hate and bullshit going on between all those people.
And you know what? Do you know who the worst are? The millipede people. Oh my God.
Really?
Yes. They're like,
I didn't even know.
Go on to try and find some millipede groups right on Facebook and then just watch them. Oh my God. Yeah. They're militant millipedes. Oh, It's almost like far right preaching about millipedes. It's mental.
Yeah.
I love it.
I've been kicked out of leopard gecko, more than one leopard gecko communities. They've kicked me out for the smallest things. It's like 90% of husbandry we agree on, but there's one aspect that I do a little bit different. And they're like, get the hell out of here. I'm like, whoa, all right. I didn't realize that was a thing.
Dude, I actually get kicked out of spider groups all the time as well, so it's fine. And I'm not that, I got to be honest, I'm not that dick that like will go into a newbie for the wrong question. It's not my ethos. That's not my ethos at all. I mean, we need this hobby and, you know, new people is the only way. At the end of the day, me and you know, we're getting old, you know?
Yeah.
We need people like Princess Sophie Pink and, you know, those guys. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, where's he going with this? Yeah. You just depressed me. Yeah, I know I'm getting old. Thanks.
I say it like a couple.
Yeah, I think that is awesome.
A couple more times before the podcast's over, I'll mention it now. It's fine. But yeah, man.
I really think Princess Sophie Pink, like her channel, really, it was amazing to me. Somebody that young and female was so into tarantulas and spiders and stuff like that. I think it's, and I've seen a lot of, not so much on YouTube, but I've had a lot of, I don't want to say kids, but young people, like college age or high school age, that have, like, I actually had a friend of mine reached out to me, and his daughter was really into reptiles and then just recently started getting into tarantulas. And she like went from 1 to 20 very fast. And he was concerned. And I was like, it's pretty typical. Like, that's okay. You know, and I was like, it's a growing hobby. It's there's, you know, celebrities that are now starting to talk about keeping tarantulas. So I think it's catching on.
Go on.
How do you feel about the people that buy their first tarantula? They've got one or two tarantulas. And then within 6 months' time, they've got 100. Like, is that concerning to you, or do you think that's typical?
It is pretty typical for the hobby nowadays. But I've always said, and I say it quite often on Facebook, there is no real beginner spider. Any spider is a beginner spider if you are happy, comfortable, you know, confident, and you've done your research. You know, if you know that spider, you can have anything you want. You know, I know some people who have had, you know, pokies as their first spiders and have, well, prime example, my girlfriend, her first spider was a pokey, you know. She does have me here, though, you know, that helps, I suppose. But her first one was a pokey. That's pretty, pretty cool. You know, you can have anything you want at the end of the day. I'm not, who am I, man? Who am I to tell you how to keep your spiders, you know?
I thought you were the tarantula geeky.
Ah, I hope so. I'm only Zool, man.
Yeah, there's been a few people that I've, especially, you see this a lot on Facebook and Instagram, that get their first tarantula, they don't really know much about it, and very quickly, all of a sudden, have 100 and are breeding, or even more. Mm. There's a couple of people that I've seen.
Yeah.
You know, they quickly surpassed even what I keep. And like, I personally get concerned.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's just like, I just know how much work it is feeding and watering and rehousing. But also at the same time, it's like, I don't know them. I don't know their story. Maybe they'd have plenty of free time.
Yeah. And, perhaps that's all they do.
You know, they're dedicated. Yeah. So like, I avoid judging those people, but I see it a lot online. You know, there's a lot of people that seem to get very upset about that. So I just didn't know if you had a personal opinion, you know, while we're offending people and talking about controversial stuff, if like you had like some kind of ideas, what you think is a responsible progression for keeping multiple species?
I think probably, you know, it's hard to put a number on it. Really? If you got your first spider and then within, you know, the next order you make from Fear Not Tarantulas or whatever, you've ordered like 50. There's something up there, you know. There's no way that you can know everything you need to keep that animal happy and safe and thriving in that time. I am a massive fan of letting people make their own mistakes, but when it comes to animals, you've got to kind of take that with a grain of salt. You know, you can't just say, oh, you know, make their own mistakes, but all the whole collection dies, that would be irresponsible as well. But you walk a fine line between telling someone exactly what they can and can't do, which I hate.
Yeah.
And, you know, having a spider that will thrive. You know, at the end of the day, these things are quite tough, mind. They're not, you know, they're not, you don't have to wrap them in cotton wool, is also what I'm trying to say, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if you provide the spider with three of its basic needs, you know, decent substrate, decent hide, and access to water, spiders are really, really bulletproof. You know, that's and then they can obviously have the time then to make the right kind of choices and do the right kind of research. But I don't understand. I've seen it quite a lot as well. I personally don't understand how you can kill a spider in like a day. I don't know that. So like a new guy comes on the scene, gets his first tarantula, gets 10 more by the Friday, and then he's killed one already by the Saturday. And we're, obviously something's going wrong there, isn't it? You know.
I was saying that I get this question a lot. People are asking like what the difference is between hoarding tarantulas and just keeping a lot of different species. You know, like my wife sometimes or family members think that I have way too many tarantulas. Like I got a friend that thinks I have, like I'm addicted. Like I have I'm a tarantula-holic or something like that. I need to go to therapy. And
we all are, definitely.
Yeah. So, but there's also that, you know, I think that it's not really hoarding until you're not caring for them.
There's
you're
a
not
tipping
able to
point.
Provide the care.
There is definitely a tipping point. And I've found that at the moment I'm off work waiting a surgery on my back again. So it's obviously it's a lot harder for me to care for a lot of tarantulas like that. So I've sold a few, I've given a few away, I've reduced it down. Some have naturally passed away, and I've just not filled that. Oh, sorry, just not filled that tank up again. You know,
sure.
Just for to make sure that I can care for everything, you know.
Yeah,
that's. I'm going to. It's in production at the moment, so I'll have a look on the website for it later on. Maybe it'll say a T-shirt that says "Tarantula is more addictive than crack," and it's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, I can definitely feel that, and I think part of it is just because you get a species, it arrives in the mail. It's very exciting.
Oh,
you get
that
like endorphin rush of getting something new and seeing it, setting it up. And then like 3 days later it burrows and then you don't see it for a week.
Yeah.
So it's like, I want to feel that again. So I order another one, you know, or it's
definitely,
it's kind of like that collectible thing, you know, like I want to get all the Brachypelmas or all the Afauna Pelmas or whatever it is.
Pokemon
and,
times.
Like, a lot of them. Yeah. and I think that the number is different for different people. You know, like some people, like I think their max may be 20.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like you can only care responsibly for 20. Somebody else may be able to keep 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, anyways, what I'm trying to say is it's not my place to tell somebody how many tarantulas they should keep.
I'm with you on that one, man, definitely. But there is that point, doesn't it?
But,
yeah, it is that point, doesn't it? That tipping point. And there's no harm in just, if you notice that, just politely suggest something to that person. You know, we all need a nudge sometimes. So
it's very true.
Yeah, sound man.
Just real quick, I just want to get your opinion on DKS. Is you think that's a real thing, or do you where do you land on
so
that?
So I know DKS covers a large amount of symptoms and problems, doesn't it? Let's be honest. There isn't one specific thing that's DKS, you know, obviously the wobbly legs and the struggling to carry themselves properly, you know, that is what we call DKS. DKS is then a general broad term that we put on for unwell or, unhealthy spiders. I've seen a lot of DKS symptoms. Not personally, not my spiders, but on social medias from usually 3 to 4 days after cleaning an enclosure, for instance, you know. And I just try and politely ask. Sometimes I'm not that polite in asking. What did you clean it with? You know, I think a lot of it's chemical. You know, a lot of it's parasitic. So wild caught spiders, they come into it, that comes into it. I spoke to, we're very lucky in the UK, we've got the British Tarantula Society, you know, the oldest one in the world. And they do lectures every March. They do a lectures. And there was a vet there, and he's the first guy who's actually trying to look into, you know, the flat out symptoms of what we class as DKS. It was a really interesting lecture. He tended to think as well. I think that he tended to think that it was more of a poisoning or a chemical, or, you know, it's a neurological thing, isn't it? You can basically the legs of the spiders are not firing properly, not sending the messages back to the central nervous system. So there's a breakdown in something somewhere. What causes it?
So he thinks it's more environmental than biological.
Yeah. It does seem that there's more of an event before, you know, a certain time before DKS is seen. There's something that's changed. I sometimes ask people with DKS. I said, okay, look at your enclosure, look at your spider. What have you changed in the last kind of week? And usually they'll go, oh, like we've had, I don't know, things vaping, not vaping, but like things, you know, I can't even speak at the moment, Rich, sorry. Things to get rid of like bugs in your house. You know, I've bombed outside or something, or I've taken the enclosure and I've given it a good scrub. But I did, and it's always you get the, I rinsed it properly though. Yeah, but did you though? You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it really seems like a term that's like a catch-all.
Of course,
like,
it is.
If there's if there's ever like a situation where your tarantula is sick and dies that you don't know why, you can't just, you know, it's like, it was DKS. And so I think that aspect of it kind of makes it where some people just don't even think that it's a real thing. You know, it's like there's multiple things that could be that we're just all describing as DKS.
That's exactly the point I was trying to make, that DKS, you know, dyskinetic, was it dyskinetic syndrome, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really just something we've stuck on, something we don't understand, a label that we don't understand, you know. Hopefully there'll be a lot more research into stuff like this with invertebrates in the future. There's a lot happening. I mean, vets are starting to take spiders seriously for once, you know.
Yeah.
Like my friend's a vet, and he said, look, when I trained, you don't do anything about invertebrates. You don't do anything at all. It's small furries or large animals, you know, farm animals or small furries. And he said, that's changing. Slowly it's changing. They're getting actual proper teaching on how to do invertebrates, which is cool. You know?
Yeah. Like the vet I take our dogs and cats to, he does a lot with exotics as well. Like just different reptiles and snakes. Yeah. And like, he's one of the only ones in our area. Like all the pet shops, when they got a sick snake, they bring it down there. So I was talking to him about that, and like I actually ran into him at the pet store, and he was talking to the manager about one of their snakes that he had in his care and how it was doing, and he was going to bring it back so they would be able to sell it. And so I was like, well, do you deal with tarantulas at all? And he was just like, no, I don't deal with inverts at all. But he was telling me that there are people like in the next town, like in Pittsburgh and larger cities,
specialists
that
they
do deal with that.
You know, I usually find that they're a hobbyist themselves. That's how they've started, you know, researching. Veterinary care for invertebrates, it's brilliant. But DKS, man, it just made me think of another T-shirt idea. DKS, yeah.
It's a tough one.
It is.
I get so many messages from, especially on Instagram. People will send me a video of their. It's like, is this DKS? And it's like, no, that is just a tarantula that just molted.
Yeah.
Like, you need to leave it alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's stressed out.
Oh, a lot of it, like severe dehydration, can cause like. The DKS symptoms, you know, the wobbly legs and stuff. And you're like, well, has it got access? Yeah. You look at the enclosure as well. You say, okay, let's have a look at what you keep it in, how you keep it. And you can usually point something out that might not be, you know, top notch. But
yeah,
I do think we got a lot of people who sometimes they either don't know, like you said yourself, they either don't know what's happened to the spider, so they just put a label on it, or they know that they've done something to, you know, by cleaning it, by doing it. They know, and they go, no, I haven't done nothing. I've done nothing. DKS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was one, somebody had evidently either dropped the tarantula or they didn't provide enough substrate in their enclosure, so it had climbed to the top and fell, and it had like a ruptured abdomen on the underside that was causing, you know, and they're like, it's DKS. It's like, no, that tarantula's been damaged. Yeah. Like, that's a wounded tarantula.
No.
It's DKS,
but tell me about that giant hole in its abdomen.
it's leaking. Yeah. And that brings up something else. We're talking about cleaning enclosures and stuff like that. Like, do you, when I get this is another question. So I'm actually going to make a video on this addressing it, but I just want to get your opinion on it. How often, or do you ever change a substrate in your adult enclosures?
The only ever time I would change my substrate if I could see a problem with it. If it, like coir, you know, the cocoa husk stuff can sometimes explode with mushrooms. And so I might change it. I might just scrape the top off if it's like that and see how we go again. You got to remember, who cleans their stuff for them in the wild? You know, they haven't got anyone going around cleaning their stuff in the wild. I'll clean the glass with just a bit of tissue, you know, tissue paper. But with like water, nothing else, just elbow grease and water. But other than that, I try not to mess with it at all. You know, the mantra, isn't it? Just leave them alone, man. Just leave them alone.
Right. I mean, I only clean my enclosures like ones that tarantulas are living in, because you know a lot of those like Postlatherias and a lot of your arboreals will just cover the glass and poop. So I just get warm, like I just get the reverse osmosis water.
Yeah, perfect.
You know what I mean? Like stuff that I know has been purified and warm it up, or even just use a cold, but warm seems to break the poop up a little bit better, and just clean it with that. But there's, and I'm not like, you know, criticizing anybody, because I understand the confusion, but it seems like a lot of people take reptile husbandry, especially if they keep snakes, and assume that same style of husbandry applies
absolutely,
to tarantulas. So they need to change a substrate every month, and they need to change the water every day, and they need to have a heat lamp. You know, it's like,
you see it,
trying to break people of that mindset is very difficult, I find.
Yeah, it's you're absolutely correct. It's the reptile side of it, isn't it? It's the herps and stuff, you know, changing their bedding. Spider, at the end of the day, I'm sure, like, if I left an enclosure and it sprouted with mushrooms, the spider doesn't give a shit. It's not going to harm the spider in any way. And as long as that's the case and it's not harming anything, leave it. I don't see why you can't leave it, isn't it? And bloody hell,
I agree.
Changing your substrate every month with the amount of spiders me and you've got. God.
Yeah.
I'd be broke as well as...
It causes a lot more stress.
Yeah, absolutely, And I've got some spiders here, right, that I haven't seen in about 8 months. I know they're alive because... The water, you know, the food disappears, the roaches disappear, and every now and then the odd molt gets chucked out of a retreat. So, and that's, I'm happy with that. I know if I don't see my spider, it's happy. You know, if you're seeing things like lividus, you know, like cobalt blues, if you get to see that spider all the time, something's wrong with the setup. You know,
it's very true. I feel like the theme of this podcast, maybe what we should title it, is just leave your tarantulas.
Yeah,
home.
Man. So I can get that tattooed on me.
Yeah. The substrate thing is, I mean, cause I'm on the same, in the same boat as you. Like, I don't change my tarantula substrate unless there's like a severe mold problem that I can't control by just reducing the humidity in the enclosure temporarily. You know, even then I feel like, you know, I'll rehouse the tarantula. If I don't address the condition or the reasons that the mold was present in the first place, it's just going to happen.
Of course, over and over again. And that's time that you're taking out and that's stress that you're giving to the spider every single time, you know. If you try and get it right, if you try and get the conditions right, then the spider will be happy and you'll have less work to do yourself.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So how many tarantulas are in your collection right now? Or inverts in total?
Not many, to be honest.
Yeah.
I've got all the pokies apart from three and couples of each. I'd reckon about 50, maybe 60 in total. And that's not counting all the, obviously, jumping spider babies, because there's hundreds of those, but they don't count.
Yeah. Do you have any communal tarantulas? Are you keeping anybody communally right now?
Right now, I've got a male and female Poslotheria tigrina wasselli in together, and I plan to just leave them until the sac hatches together as well.
Okay.
So, that's pretty cool. I'm not a massive fan of communal stuff. I mean, like, the hot craze at the moment is Balfouri, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, it is.
And maybe that's great. You know, maybe they do really well there, but it's not for... I'm not a massive fan of it. I just don't want to put my spiders at risk. Even the tiny amount of risk it is with Balfouri, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
it seems like...
Go on.
Like, lately, it's not just Balfouri. There's also NC.
Yeah.
I see people talking about keeping those Poslotheria metallicas, and I can't remember. There was a few other Poslotheria species that I even had, like, a breeder here in the U.S. offered to, like, send me 10, I think it was Poslotheria regalis or something like that, to keep as a communal. And, you know, I was like, I don't think I want to do that. Like, I appreciate getting free spiders, but
yeah.
I don't want to be the guy that's, like, responsible for
8 of the 10 of them dying.
Yeah.
I mean, two big fat ones at the end, like, you know.
Yeah, that's not what I want to do. So I had to politely decline that. But it seems like there's this craze right now, maybe because M. balfouri has been shown to
be so successful
in a lot of cases. People are like, well, what other species can we do? And I mean, that's a dangerous game to play.
All right, okay, so we're on the controversy podcast today, all right? So you've got... Yeah,
I'm just trying to get you cancelled. That's my
yeah,
goal.
No, I don't mind, man. If you get me cancelled, it's a holiday for me. It's fine. Guys who are listening to this podcast now, please don't take this the wrong way, but all the communal stuff is usually happening with newer keepers, okay? You've got to remember that Neoholothelli in C... Holothelli, you know, Villosella, the H. gigas, all these things have been kept communally 20 years ago. You know, people know if they work or not. Do them yourself if you want to do them, with all means, but it's been done before, and there's a reason why they're not being kept like that. My two cents.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you there. I do have an M. balfouri enclosure. I started with four, and I'm down to three because one of them mysteriously died. And it wasn't, I know that it didn't get eaten.
Right.
It like came out of its burrow, made a little web mat at the front of the enclosure, went to molt, and just like never, it just died molting.
Oh,
like,
I don't know if it was a bad mold. That happens, like, man, yeah.
You know, or maybe it got disturbed by one of the other tarantulas while it was molting, or what happened. I was kind of heartbroken, and it was like right out there in the open, so I was like, oh, I'm gonna get video of it molting and have a time lapse of the tarantula dying, essentially.
Oh,
it's
no.
Like, what the hell?
Oh no,
it's terrible.
Did you release and, that?
No. I did not. Watch my tarantula lay dead for 12 hours.
Yeah,
that's riveting content right there.
Yeah, and you're like,
but it is something that I had to like really assess the situation. Like, did it die because it just was a bad molt?
Yeah.
Or, you know, it just wasn't strong enough to survive? Or did it die because it was an incommunal?
Did they take it, you know, did they take it a little bit too far and give it a little nip while it was molting or something? You know.
Yeah. I mean, I checked the footage. I didn't see them bother it at all,
no.
But, you know, it was also a time lapse. So it could have just very, you know, I was like every 3 seconds or something, it was taking a shot. So a tarantula could have very quickly ran across it and I wouldn't have seen it, you know, if it was timed correctly. But
again,
you know, it just made me really second guess keeping them communally, just because I don't want to lose them anymore. Like, those are expensive spiders.
There's also such a thing, right, with this tarantula hobby as overthinking stuff. All right, loads and loads of questions. You probably get the same stuff, and it's the same questions, right? And people are overthinking things. The two, I think, the mantra for the podcast, the two things, isn't it? Leave them alone. Yeah. And don't overthink stuff. Sometimes spiders just die. You know,
Sometimes
shit happens. You know, there's no always a clear, defined reason for your spider dying.
Especially spiderlings.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're just not strong enough to survive. In the wild, they would have been one that died off.
They'd have been predated straight away, you know, they'd have been picked off.
Yeah.
Especially.
I get those questions a lot, like, what did I do wrong? And they give me a list of, you know, how they kept it and show me pictures. And I'm like, I can't see anything you did wrong. Yeah. It could have just been, it just wasn't one that was meant to survive.
Yeah, it just died. Versicolor, I can't keep spiderlings versicolors. I don't know what it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. For 10 years, I've been trying to keep versicolors and raise them from spiderlings. I every time lose them. So I've just obviously stopped. I'm like, nah, I'm not even bothering. And like I had
to... we're kind of going...
Go on.
We're going a little long on time. If you got a few more minutes, I got a couple more questions I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, sure, but...
And versicolor kind of brought it up.
Okay.
I don't even want to say it was controversial, but it kind of was. There was some people that were posting online just because they were having issues keeping that spider alive. It needs ventilation, but it also needs humidity. And they were suggesting keeping not just like a large water dish in the bottom of the enclosure, but just having the bottom of the enclosure just all water, like no substrate at all, just a couple inches of water inside the enclosure. Have you ever considered doing something like that? Do you think that's a good idea, a bad idea? I mean, have you even seen anybody doing that?
In the UK, Corby, we started going through the whole cross ventilation stuff first, you know, the dreaded cross ventilation. And then a guy, I'm not going to, obviously I won't name him on the podcast there, but he wanted to try and challenge all the ventilation stuff. So he actually kept, he had his own egg sac of Carabina versicolor, and he kept all the spiderlings in just... pots with just obviously just a little bit of cork back, no ventilation, obviously one little hole for some airflow, but no cross ventilation, no spraying, no nothing, just feeding. And nearly, you know, you got most of them. I would say like 90% of them to adult. So, you know, I can't. I've tried it his way. I've tried it my way. I haven't tried it with the water at the bottom. I don't see a point, to be honest, when you can provide a water dish anyway. You can provide some damp substrate. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the point in risking just like, it molts in its web, obviously, but what happens if it molts and falls? You know,
it's definitely a danger. And I think in these cases, they were mainly keeping juveniles and adults with, it wasn't the slings, but... I thought it was an interesting concept,
but I
just saw them get crucified online and then never heard about
people
it again.
People are certainly trying.
Like, I wonder how
trying
that worked
to think
out.
Outside the box, you know. And I'll give that to them, fair play. But there's some stuff, man. You see online and you just go, "Dude, that's not going to work."
So you don't keep C. versicolor at all.
Not at all.
Any avicularia?
I used to have. Juranensis, I think it is morphotype 6. I haven't had any avics for a couple of years now, not since I moved to this house anyway.
Yeah. Now this question is I made this video, it's been over a year ago. It was like top 10 mistakes keeping tarantulas. And in it I talked about using heat lamps or heating pads for your species. How like the dangers that could come, and it's better to raise the ambient room temperature rather than having a direct heat light on top of an enclosure. And like, I'm not bashing people from the UK at all, but I get a lot of messages from people in the UK saying that it's a lot colder there than it is in other places of the world. And they need a heat light on their tarantula. And the fact that you're in Wales, you know, I'm wondering, can you give a little insight on that? Is that true? Or, you know, can do you have heat lights on your tarantulas?
God,
you know,
no.
People that do?
No.
Okay.
I'm sweating pints here at the moment. This room is heated to, behind me, this black thing here. So I heat the room to 28 degrees nearly all times with a 2-degree drop at night. What I would say, right, is that if you've got a room like this, then obviously you're not going to use heat mats because that's just really super expensive to start with.
Yeah.
Also, as well, there is a danger with heat mats with fire. There is, unless they're on stats and stuff.
Yeah. And those are expensive.
And they're super expensive. Yeah. So, you know, if you've got one spider, the rule in the UK is that if you're comfortable, they're comfortable. I'm not quite... Mm-hmm. in that school of thought because I breed spiders, so I need to mimic their natural environment as much as possible. But a spider will quite happily survive, you know, at your comfortable room temperature. If you need to put, I've always said, if you need to put extra heat, you can always not ever directly attach a heat mat to the underneath, because that's death sentence, because a spider will always burrow down to get out of its to get cooler if it needs to. Place it on the side of another enclosure, so double box it, just to be super safe, man. And you know, that's going over the top, you don't need to do that. But there's some parts of the UK, you know, that go down to like -9, you know, for a long time. For, you know, like Scotland is basically in the dark for 7 months of the year. I'm down south, so I'm lucky. We get it quite warm down here.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, there was I know a lot of people in Canada that keep them. And, you know, I understand you got a drafty house or a room in particular that your tarantulas in are drafty. But, you know, I'm always I got a heater down here in my basement. Because even if it's like, man, my wife gets so frustrated with me because, like, she likes it, especially in the winter, about 68 degrees. Mm. And that's upstairs. And so that means in the basement, it's like 64, maybe 62. So I'll turn the heater on down here. Like, I get a little, kind of like you have, a little space.
Space heater, yeah.
Try to keep this room nice and warm. And sometimes that causes conflict in our house because heat rises.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I try to keep it 72 here. That means upstairs, it's also getting even warmer.
Yeah.
And so I got to find ways. I was actually talking with my brother-in-law, and he's going to help me. Because I just got, like, I'm in a basement, so it's all cinder block kind of walls down here. And he's going to help me kind of build it out a little bit, put in some insulation and drywall so that it'll stay warm. But it's like, I just moved everything down here, like one side of the basement to the other, got it all set up. But I'm like, and now it's going into winter. So like, where would I put them while we do this construction project? I have to keep them in the garage where there's no insulation and it's extremely cold. So we'll have to wait till next summer to do that. But
it's on the cards, though, isn't it? You know,
it is,
little tip, when I was growing up, because obviously I didn't have a huge, I only had a couple of spiders when I was like, you know, 18, 19. I used a snake viv, you know, and I had my spiders inside the snake viv. So I basically created a little microclimate inside that. You know, that's a lot cheaper than trying to do that. You're not cooking your spiders with heat mats or lamps, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done something similar, Mike. I call it my nursery. It's where all my spiderlings are in. And it's just a 20-gallon enclosure on its side that I can put them all in. I put heat mats on the top, and it kind of radiates heat down. It keeps it about 76, 78 degrees in there. And, you know, got a water dish just kind of sitting out there open.
Nice so and perfect.
Is nice and warm.
There's stuff you can
do. Everybody's warm, but nobody's direct heat.
Yeah, there's stuff you can do, isn't it, to survive the winter? I mean, if they're surviving the winter in Canada, come on, they can survive pretty much anywhere.
And I don't know if it's pet shops or if like we were talking about earlier, it's just this crossover from people that keep herps. That thought that tarantulas need direct heat from a light. I think that more tarantulas die because of that than have ever been saved from it.
Oh, definitely.
Providing warmth.
100%. Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I think that's pet shops for you. Majority, you know, spiders are not big money for pet shops at the end of the day. Yeah. So they don't tend to read up about them, you know. And they'll treat it like, they'll treat it like a snake, you know, or they'll treat it like a bearded dragon.
I wanted to get your take on it just because you're so far removed. And I know that I'm guilty of kind of, especially with social media, getting stuck in my own bubble.
So yeah, it's like, no, yeah, I'm definitely.
I say things, I put it in videos, and then I hear that come back at me. Like, other people are repeating what I've already said. And then it creates this like, oh, this is what I believe based almost off what I said 6 months ago. Yeah. So I don't know if that's actually fact or not. You know, I don't want to get stuck in a bubble. So I really want to kind of get your take on that.
Everything changes, you know. At the end of the day, if you're not learning every day, you know, that's not the way to go. You know, I've been keeping for 30 years, and I've got, you know, I'm no expert. You know, I know a bit about stuff, but I'm no, you know, I'm no expert. Like, you know, and I don't want to also as well tell you that my way is the right way, because you know, we all F up at the end of the day sometimes.
It's very true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really seems like a lot of things in life, the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know.
Exactly, you know? Man.
Like,
yeah.
I have a conversation with Lewis, does like,
Arachnido.
For a little while.
Yeah, Arachnido. Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lewis like, Rock. Yeah. He knows so much stuff. I didn't even realize I could learn.
Yeah.
He's he's a lot of that scientific
he's
stuff.
He's a real good guy.
It blows my mind.
He's
actually coming on the podcast, I think, in 2 weeks.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I'll talk for a little while.
That's good. I'll listen to that, definitely.
I
got a few mates in the UK who are taxonomists. And, you know, we go out for beers and stuff when the British Transcendental Society stuff is on. And, you know, I sit there on a table with them drinking beers, and I have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. It's crazy. You know,
so is there a pretty good relationship between hobbyists and taxonomists in the UK?
Not really.
Or is there a lot of resentment?
Yeah, I'm just quite lucky that I've been in doing this for such a long time that I know people. I know who's sound and who's not sound. You know.
Yeah.
I think most of the hobbyists just can't get over that you have to change names all the time. You know, they just change. That's all they see of taxonomists is like. I think taxonomists, yeah, right, are the bee's knees of the tarantula hobby, but everyone else thinks they're the enemy. You know, they're not the enemy, man.
They made me break out my label printer again.
Oh yeah, they love that, man. You have to have shares in, shares in the company. But yeah, it's good stuff, man.
Like, it's a little. It can be inconvenient, but I mean, I'd rather be right than lazy, I guess.
100%, 100%.
Like the Tillicottle one kind of caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
Like I had just made a video about the Brocky Pelmavoggin to be uploaded on Tuesday. Like it was already uploaded on YouTube, like scheduled and everything. And then Monday they came out with the paper and changed the name. I'm like, are you for real? Like I'm not re-recording that video.
No, it's like, yeah.
I'll just have to just do it change the title or something.
Thumbnail. Just change the thumbnail.
That's pretty much what I did.
You could,
I was like, man, that timing was terrible.
You could dub it, man. Every time you go into like Bracket Pelmer, it goes beep to the cottle. like a robot voice. That'd be funny as hell.
Yeah. I might have to do that.
All right.
So you're on Instagram, YouTube.
Basically,
got your website.
Yeah, basically, mate. Right, if you just type in Google, type into Google Arachnotube, I'm on everything. I'm like, you know, patient zero. Cool. I'm like the virus. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Arachnotube on YouTube. I'm coming up to a milestone as well. I know you were speaking to Alex about his 10,000 and I don't usually tell people what subscribers I've got, but I am approaching 10,000 now, so I'm happy about that.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, that's very cool. Like, I think that's one of the craziest things about YouTube and just the way it works is that subscribers really don't matter at all. Like, that's just like a badge, social media badge or something like that. Like, the YouTube algorithm takes that in, like, it doesn't take into consideration at all.
And do you know what? It's the number one question I get asked on everything is how many subs
really?
I've got. Oh yeah. Every single day, every single video, every single Facebook thing. And I'm like, I don't care. Why do you care?
Yeah. I mean, it's like people use that as a way to rate how reliable your information is. And it's like, that is a horrible way.
Yeah, that's wrong. But
if somebody's reliable, especially when you look at some of the channels out there with a lot, and I'm not just talking about tarantula people, but
yeah.
You know, anybody that does any videos on any kind of animal, sometimes like that, what is it? It's like Jungle Bob or something like that.
Jungle
Bob.
Millions
of views, millions of subscribers. And it's like, that's some terrible husbandry advice.
This is bonkers. You should say Jungle Bob. He literally just added my girlfriend on Facebook.
No way.
I was like,
he's still out there.
I was like, you've got to fucking accept him. I was like,
that's awesome. Well, I don't think you'll be sending me one now.
No.
I said that. But nah. Yeah, it's, I mean, a lot of times when you look at subscribers or you look at views on a video, it really just is, it's just telling you how long they've been around, not
so much how
good the quality is or how entertaining they are.
And also as well, right, you'll be a workhorse like yourself. I used to consider myself a workhorse, but I'm not anymore. So I just want to say to any like aspiring YouTube guys that are out there, it's going to take us, it's a slog. Sometimes it happens instantly. Sometimes it takes years, but it's only ever that one video and then everything takes off. So keep at it if you're going to do it. Because don't get disheartened, because I feel you guys. I get so disheartened when I work really hard in the video and like 12 people see it. But that's the game, you know, that's the game. I've just got a video now that's hitting 1 million views. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
Well, about awesome. It's like 900,000 views at the moment, but by Christmas it'll
that's
be 1 million.
Crazy.
Yeah. You know, and that's just right place, right time. You know, I like to think it's all right as well. It's a good video, but it was literally just right place, right time for that one.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the analytics they put out, like on average, it takes someone uploading 100 videos before they even get 1,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
a lot of work, you know, but if you had one video that just kind of takes off, in my case, I just had one video that a month after I upload it, for whatever reason, clicked in the YouTube algorithm and it shot up from like a couple of hundred video views a day to thousands of views a day. And it's like, I didn't do anything. It just the way it worked out.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the majority of my subscribers came from.
That video now is on still doing, I think it's about like 4,000 views every 48 hours. So do you know what I mean?
Nice.
That's where all my subscribers are coming from, really. So, hey guys, if you've surprised me recently, thanks. And I'll be here all week.
Yeah.
Rich man.
All right, man. So do you got any videos coming out in the near future you want to shout out before wrap things up?
Hang on. I want to shout out. I'm actually doing a challenge video. It's been released now. So today is Sunday, isn't it? So go over, please, people, to The Invertebarian. Have you ever heard of The Invertebarian, Rich?
I have,
yeah. So we on
through Tarantula Tubers Saturday Night.
That's
takeaway.
The boy, yeah.
I think he was, yeah.
So it's The Invertebarian. There are a bunch of us. Basically, Adam's being like the guy from, oh God, what's Jigsaw? What's his, Saw, isn't it? Jigsaw, yeah. And he's sending us challenges to do. So that's out already now. And it was a good one. I liked it.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Are you involved in Fatal Fangs at all?
I am. I'll be in Fatal Fangs. I've submitted my content. So we're just waiting now. The judges have gone through, I think, all the way up to semi-finals, and then they'll be released as they go then. But yeah, that's looking forward to that. I love Fatal Fangs.
And that's being released on Bug Realms, correct?
Yes, yeah, Sam.
Is that his channel?
Bugman, okay. Sam, on Bug Realms. Yes, good, man. This is an American judge, a UK judge and a European judge. So it's going to be fair. You know what I mean? There's no public voting. Last year was insane, man.
Yeah, I remember watching that. That was something else.
I was sitting in the pub when mine and Tom Moran, I went against Tom Moran.
Yeah.
And like the votes, right? I was sitting there just having a beer and Tom was messaging me. He's like, have you seen this? I was like, oh man, it was going up like 100 for me, then 100 for him, then 100 for me, then 100 for him. Someone was just using, what do you call him, man?
VPN?
Yeah, using a VPN, yeah.
Yeah.
And just smashing them. But it was just hilarious. Like the actual video itself only had like 300 views, but I had like something like 4,500 votes.
That's pretty wild. All right, man. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on and doing the podcast.
Thank you very much, man.
And everybody, you know, go check out his website. I got scrolling across the bottom of the screen there. You can link up to pretty much all of Gar's ArachnoTube social media accounts. And everything is there. Nice centralized location. But anyways, I look forward to checking out those videos and seeing. I look forward to your Fatal Fangs video a lot, I think. It's probably
what I'm
looking for the most, but. Thanks so much. I highly recommend everybody go check him out. I appreciate you all listening to the podcast, and I will, I guess I'll see you guys next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Stay safe.